Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Wednesday, 1 November. We have medium-term budget policy statement, 2 o'clock, Federal Open Monetary Committee, 8 p.m. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, we're chatting with Alex Dace, the AB InBev results. A lot of moving parts there, but short answer, I think maybe a little better than what the market had expected, and they are trying to get some of that debt paid down. And Woolies buying Absolute Pets. I don't know, we'll see a quick question there if we've got time at the end. Sean Nesling from Morningstar South Africa, cash as an asset class, low correlation to other asset classes, good return and optionality. And then Krishan Gopal from World Gold Council, their third quarter report, central banks still buying and production still on track for a record year. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb stock files, the answer to many questions, power of collective savings and unified investing goals in stock files. Business day, Sasfin lifts lid on bank criminals. The company and the Reserve Bank launched investigations after allegations of a gold smuggling operation. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 0.2%, NASDAQ up 0.5%. Over in the east, it's green, Sydney up 0.3%, Tokyo 2% higher. Commodities mostly red, gold 1,987, did not make a record closing monthly high. Brent 85.39, platinum is green at 940, palladium 1,130. Rand 18.67, Bitcoin 34,500, 10 cent down 0.6% in Hong Kong, and top 40 opening call, 210 points to the upside. That is 0.3% green.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Alex Dace from Mthombo Wealth. Alex, always appreciate the early morning. AB InBev, a giant of a company on the JSE, truthfully a fairly big company globally. Results out, revenue up 5%, organic volumes falling 3.4%, but announcing a $1 billion buyback, a $3 billion cash for bond plan. This is never a stock that's going to shoot the lights out. It is a mature, largely ex-growth. Your take on the numbers?
Morning, Simon. Yes, it is Q3 numbers, so obviously it's quite volatile from quarter to quarter, but I think this set of results on a net basis is probably slightly positive, especially since the EBITDA margins were slightly higher than anticipated. You know, if you look at the underlying markets in South America, which of course big in Brazil and Colombia, they did very well there. I mean, up actually over 54% from EBITDA perspective. And in Middle America, they also did quite well. I think the one area, the reason why organic volumes are down remains North America, right? So we all know what happened in the United States regarding some of the backlash there from consumers. Volumes are still down 17% for Bud Light, or for the region, predominantly due to Bud Light. So it's difficult to say when that is going to start moving out of the base and some of recovery there. Mm-hmm. It's important to note that the U.S. market is still growing, the beer market. So it's only Anheuser-Busch that's underperforming there. And I think the outlook also for me seems quite positive. I mean, it's still anticipating quite mid to high single-digit EBITDA growth for a beer. And as you alluded to, they're doing share buybacks and buying back debt, which is, you know, very important. I think the debt is also very well structured. I think the average cost of debt is still about only 4%. So regardless of what happened to interest rates, the way it's been structured at Anheuser-Busch, you know, it's still good. So they're not under that much pressure to reduce debt compared to some other companies.
Yeah, I take your point. That debt profile, it's a large amount of it, but it's not at scary rates, and some of it is fairly long-term. Woolies buying Absolute Pets. I mean, it's a relatively small deal in Woolies' life. The pet market, I think, is definitely growing. Someone was saying to me that the margins are quite tight there. I suspect it's probably one of those deals which, I mean, it's not going to move the needle in any great way, but it is an interesting shift for them.
It's a new one because I read a survey from Insight and they give a global pet market, and they said the global pet market in 2022 was $235 billion. So, and it's expected to grow at about 5.9% up until 2030. So that's a big growing market. And if you look at what, you know, I read an article on Business Day for Woolworths, and they said this market currently in Africa is about 7.5 billion for pet care. So that's still very, very small, but growing in double digits. Now, it's not, I mean, I saw some comments on Twitter and so forth, people being not particularly happy with this deal. But remember, ShopRite also owns, you know, their pet business called Pet Sciences and so forth. It is quite linked to the affluent market where people are spending more, much more on pet healthcare and so forth than they've done it before. So at the moment, I'm still sitting on a fence to say, okay, I'm not sure if this is good or bad, but I'm willing to wait for some details regarding the transaction. You know, obviously, it is a market that's growing. You know, is high consumers does have spending for this, and there's no doubt that some of the premium products and pet food is not being sold at retailers at the moment. It's more in a specialized shop. So it's interesting to see how Woolworths will, you know, try to integrate that business. Will it be still standalone, or will it form part of it, or will it be an online offering? I don't know. So we'll have to wait and see. But it's not material in the bigger scheme of things. I think that's an important note. And Woolworths certainly are. You know, they've done well. I think a lot of investors probably would like them to focus more on what they've done recently instead of doing deals. But let's see what happens as soon as you get more details.
Yeah, and I take a point. It is a giant market. It's a growing market. It's an affluent market. And Woolies wants a slice of that. Makes plenty sense. Alex Dace from Thimble Wealth. Always appreciate the early morning insights.
If seagulls were harder dars who could afford to retire to the coast, what kind of bird would you be? Would you soar over the savannah? Or chase summer around the globe? You see, even when you stop working, your money won't. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Sean Nesling. He's head of investments at Morningstar South Africa. Sean, appreciate at the time, medium-term budget policy statement, a mouthful, and it is going to be a difficult one for the finance minister as he tries to, I don't know, sort of like manage, navigate his way through, truthfully, deteriorating balance sheet as a country.
Yeah, Simon, thanks firstly for having me on the show. And again, you know, into a week where bonds take the spotlight, particularly difficult speech coming up or statement coming up. A lot's gone wrong in the bond space. They haven't managed their debt particularly well for a period of time. There's obviously been some challenges on the fiscal side. Commodities haven't really been sort of trading at the levels that we've seen in the past. So I think on the management of balance sheet debt and also just managing the fiscus, this is a particularly difficult one. So we'll see what the week holds for us.
And you say, I mean, it is, it's back to bonds, and bonds are really having their day in the sun. I mean, relative value basis, I mean, SA bonds actually have more compelling opportunity than equities, which must be very unusual.
It is. And we were looking at it, you know, a couple of days ago. And if you just look at, the implied or the expected return from South African government bonds, we actually think they're providing a much more attractive payoff profile on a risk-adjusted basis than what SA equities are. So if you just think about, you know, you have an equity risk premium that is pretty much priced off bonds. So to have a situation where bonds are potentially offering you, you know, more upside at lower risk is highly unusual. And for us, just as, you know, professional investors, you know, our job is not to avoid risk. We do concede that there are some fundamental risks to SA bonds, but at these sort of price points, as well as cash rates being at the level, you know, that they are, we do think that they offer a particularly compelling opportunity on a standalone basis, and also when thinking about it in the portfolio context.
And you mentioned cash there. In a recent note you put out, you were talking around cash versus bonds. The correlation is typically over time fairly close to zero. When we talk bonds, I mean, they are distinct from cash, and there's actually a place in a portfolio right now for cash.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, the way we think about things at Morningstar, it's really interesting to have a conversation about, let's call it, individual asset classes. At this point in the cycle, what we most focus on is how these assets combine in a holistic portfolio for clients across different mandates. So I think, you know, we've come out of an environment where cash rates have, you know, traded at historic lows post-pandemic. And with the global reset that we've pretty much seen, I suppose, on the interest rate side, cash rates are pretty attractive, both in SA and on the global side. So when we look at combining cash, you know, at very close to sort of 8%, sometimes even higher than that in a portfolio with bonds, just that correlation, which can turn negative at different points in time, being able to combine those two assets for us allows us to let's call it almost de-risk the portfolio to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Cash doesn't, you know, provide you that interest rate risk or that duration risk, you know, that longer dated bonds would. It doesn't give you that mark-to-market risk. So the opportunity to provide, you know, investors with cash rates that provide you with that incremental pickup in a portfolio with bonds is something that's especially compelling at this point in the cycle.
And you mentioned there as well, I mean, we look at equities, we look at bonds, and we consider they're different assets. They totally are. But in some senses, they have the same level of risk. You know, if we get another, I don't know, global meltdown happening and international investors become net sellers of emerging markets, including us, it's going to hurt both equities and bonds, whereas cash will be relatively unscathed.
Yeah, 100%, Simon. I think, you know, we've looked at the, obviously, the global correlation between, I suppose, global equities and global bonds. We did see a period last year where that, let's call it that, the symmetry broke down or the correlation broke down. But generally, global equities and bonds provide you, I suppose, with that different payoff profile, which we don't unfortunately have for SA equities and SA bonds. So for local managers or local investors, we have to think somewhat differently about how you combine those two in a portfolio. Unfortunately, in South Africa, both of those asset classes, so SA equities and SA bonds, you know, are particularly leveraged to the rand.
Yeah.
So when foreigners are net sellers of South Africa, both equities and bonds pretty much move in the same direction. Whereas cash, for example, it does provide you with that underpin. And that's why we do think at this point in time, you know, it's somewhat incomplete to just think about, let's call it diversification and portfolio construction purely from SA equities and SA bonds. Whereas cash at this point in time, given where the rates are, it does provide a particularly interesting solution to different portfolio mandates.
A quick last question on cash. I like cash in my portfolio for optionality, that liquidity to it. Is that something which you and your colleagues consider it at Morningstar, or is that more in my amateur vein?
No, Simon, 100%. I think, you know, the way that we think about cash is it's an asset which at most points in time or at most points in the cycle, you know, it's not an especially compelling opportunity on a standalone basis.
Mm-hmm.
But at a point in time where, you know, more things can probably go wrong that will go wrong at this point in the cycle, we do think that that optionality is particularly useful, both because it brings down risk in portfolios, but also because it provides you with that dry powder, that ammunition, or that liquidity, like you mentioned. So when we do see opportunities across other asset classes, whether it's equities or bonds, to basically use that opportunity and that cash as optionality and as a funding source for different assets. So 100% agree with you.
We leave it there, Sean Nethling, Head of Investments, Morningstar South Africa. Always appreciate the insights. That's our question today on LinkedIn and Twitter. Cash. So cash in a portfolio, typically we consider it boring. But as Sean says there, it's the uncorrelated in terms of other assets. It only ever goes one way, right? Cash can't go down. I know, inflation. But aside from that, gives you nice returns at the moment. And of course, optionality, because you can use it to buy things. Do you always have some cash in your portfolio? Have a vote, have a say. LinkedIn and X.
Your money knows that reaching new heights means turbulence. But what if you don't have to feel it? Our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to a broad range of global strategies. So when you invest in StanLib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money can withstand the ups and downs caused by market fluctuations. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Krishan Gopal, Senior Analyst at the World Gold Council. Krishan, appreciate the time today. Third quarter report out. I mean, short version, and we'll dig into some of the details, but gold demand remains resilient so far in the first 9 months of the year.
Absolutely, yeah. So we've seen that gold demand in Q3 has firmly held above its long-term average over the last 5 years. Now, underlying the picture was mixed, depending on what sector you look at. But overall, I think resilience in gold demand is a good word for it.
And mine production is also strong, and in fact, on track for a record year.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. So we've seen record levels of mine production year to date of 2,744 tons. So that's a very positive story for the mining industry, especially given, you remember a few years back where it was impacted by the COVID pandemic. So yes, very healthy on the supply side.
Is that some of it base effect and perhaps new mines coming on, or is this existing mines just managing to get more gold out of their productions?
I think there's a little of both. I think we're seeing new startups and ramp-ups of existing projects all contributing to the level of production that we're seeing currently. So I think it really is important to bear that in mind. It's also worth noting that we do, in mine production over a year, see a level of seasonality, and Q3 tends to be a very strong quarter in the year. So that is another contributing factor as well. But overall, a very, very healthy picture for gold mine production.
I suppose the seasonality does make sense. I know down here in South Africa, we shut down for the year-end holidays to a degree. Central banks continue to buy. I have to be honest, I keep on expecting that to sort of perhaps start trending down, perhaps even go negative, but the central bankers remain in the market.
Absolutely. To be honest, it's exceeded our expectations to a degree as well. So you're absolutely right. We're continuing to see incredibly robust central bank demand for gold. In the third quarter, we saw an additional 337 tons bought. And that's the third highest quarter on record in our series back to the year 2000. So it gives you a sense of the strength of appetite for gold among central banks. And what we've seen year to date is actually a total of 800 tons bought in the first three quarters. And that's 14% ahead of the same period last year. And if you remember, 2022 was a record level of annual purchases. So again, off the back of strong purchases last year, we're seeing continued strength in central bank purchases, which paints an incredibly strong picture.
Do you get details as to which banks are buying, perhaps even some sales coming through? I think we in the past have had some central bank sales, but not significant numbers.
Yes, we do. We do have generally good visibility on central bank demand. So in the third quarter in particular, we've seen buying from the likes of China, the Polish Central Bank, Turkey as well returned to buying after having sold heavily in Q2. So a lot of familiar names were again purchasing significant quantities of gold in Q3, but they were supported by modest buying by a good number of other central banks, particularly from the emerging markets. So while that's a trend we've seen for some time, it certainly shows no signs of abating anytime soon.
Moving more perhaps to investments, gold ETF, we're still seeing outflows in that space. Bars and coins doing fine, but ETF seeing some outflows. And I suppose, gold did hit an all-time high last year into this year, but still sales from those ETF holdings.
Yes, we haven't seen the reaction in gold ETFs that we have done in other forms of gold investment, as you say, bars and coins. So we've continued to see outflows in Q3, and early data for October suggest that we're continued outflows into Q4 as well. And I think what that really is down to is that ETF investors are taking their cues from what the central banks are doing on the monetary policy side. So the idea that potentially keeping interest rates higher for longer, there's uncertainty over the unfortunate geopolitical picture that we're seeing at the moment, and question marks about the global economy. You know, we're seeing a very robust US economy, which is painting question marks on what may lead on with the monetary policy in the US in particular, but similar questions around the world, in Europe, in Asia. So at the moment, it's a bit of an uncertain picture, but that certainly doesn't seem to have drawn any significant interest into gold ETFs.
With the average gold price over the period was just below, $1,928.5 an ounce to be exact. And two spaces that are contrasting. Recycling is up 9%. I imagine that's helped by price. And jewelry softer. And I imagine that is a higher gold prices. I know the story always, for example, in India, sales dip as prices rise.
You're absolutely right. I mean, the level of the gold price for both jewelry and recycling is a key factor. So the higher gold price has helped draw out some additional recycling that we've seen, you know, especially in Asia, whereas in the Middle East, it's a little more subdued. India, too, was down. But on the jewellery side, you're absolutely right. We saw, the kind of jewellery demand pressured by the higher gold price. Having said that, given the level of gold prices where we are, you know, a global jewellery demand that was down 2% year on year in the third quarter maybe is not the bad picture that it may seem at first. So I think it's certainly something to dig into the details there. We've certainly seen many, many markets actually perform fairly strongly and kind of, you know, ride that gold price despite what we've seen. So China was the big one that was slightly down, but actually year to date, it's actually 8% higher than 2022. So yeah, overall, price has been a pivotal factor in a number of sectors.
Yeah, and I take your point. I mean, considering price, jewelry actually softened, but holding well. We'll leave it there. Krishan Gopal, Senior Analyst, World Gold Council. Always appreciate the insights. That's it for today. We're chatting with Fazil Rafi from Rescura yesterday about his recent trip to China. And he thinks that things are certainly turning around. We asked if you think the Chinese economy is turning that economic corner. Almost half of you said yes, but slowly. The rest was split between no, they're struggling, and a bunch of you saying, hang on, can we trust the Chinese data? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and X. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow, MTBPS Review.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.